Whatever horror happened here 300 years ago, it's not over. Satan has come back to make me pay for my greatest sin. The sin of living.
Nicely done.
Thank you.
Do you mind taking your top off so we can see your breasts?
Yeah, sure.
Hey everybody, welcome back once again to Podcast Part 3, the Part 3 Podcast, your go-to source for all things about movies that came after two other movies. As always, I am Sam.
And I am Will.
And there's a new Tron, the third Tron's out, Tron Ares, and we haven't seen it yet, so there's nothing to talk about. So we're talking about Maxine from last year, 2024.
And one we've talked about multiple times on the podcast.
Yes, I tried once to violently deviate a conversation about The Rise of Skywalker to talk about X because I didn't want to talk about The Rise of Skywalker, and I still don't.
The unfortunate thing is I hadn't seen X, so I couldn't really help in the derailment. So.
No, this is, in fact, the third in Ty West and Mia Goth's, let's be real, horror trilogy that was started with X, followed up right after with Pearl, and finally with Maxine. The first two were in 2022, filmed essentially on top of each other,
right.
And followed up by the big sequel, the big conclusion in 2024. And I saw X when it came out, and I really liked...
Because you saw it in the theater, didn't you?
No, I saw it on streaming, which these days means you see it like 6-7 days after it comes out in the theater. No, I saw it on streaming because I don't know why I didn't go see it in the theater, because it's definitely my kind of jam. But I thought it was great. You know, it's Ty West is like, he's like a horror guy, and he's been around for a while now, but there'd been a real lull in like him having movies come out basically between Innkeepers and X. He'd done two movies, The Sacrament, which is like a found footage sort of Jonestown riff, and he did a Western with Ethan Hawke that I think neither of those really kind of broke through the way House of the Devil and The Innkeepers did, both of which I really liked. So I was excited to see X. I really liked it. And then lo and behold, suddenly there's a prequel out that I really enjoyed. And then this was the conclusion, which I liked, but I don't think I enjoyed quite as much.
Yeah, well, so I my journey with this trilogy is I watched X, probably it was right around the time Maxine came out, and I did not like it. I kind of found it a little too pretentious, a little too
a B movie with A ideas, if you will.
A B movie with A ideas, and then it got. And then I watched Pearl, and it felt like sort of more of that, but like even more so. Like the ideas were bigger. It was almost all too much to sort of take in. And then when I saw Maxine, and I saw it in the theater, and I walked out of the movie going, "Wow, I think I actually liked the other two as well." Because I walked out of Maxine being like, I dug Maxine, but I came around on the other two after this movie.
It's interesting, because I really do think seeing Pearl makes you appreciate X more, and seeing Maxine makes you appreciate X and Pearl more, but I think in this case that might come at the expense of Maxine as a movie.
Well, right. I mean, I think Maxine has, and as we sort of get into it, I think all three of these movies have big ideas and big thematic, like, big themes they want to explore. But I think the problem is that they never sort of cohere for me. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. I don't think, I think movies, it's okay for movies to be messy. But I do think that it's like every time I try to sort of wrap my head around sort of like, what are these movies trying to say about aging, about the way people and try to get, cling to fame, get fame, want fame, can't get fame. And I just, it always feels sort of like like sand through my fingers. It all just kind of like comes tumbling out, you know?
I think it's also that, like, and we talked about this before we recorded, we're looking at it from that writerly eye where perhaps we're trying to find more layers than are there, or maybe that need to be there.
Right.
Like, it really is, like, it's, you know, it is about, it's about aging and what will you do to stay young or be famous or if you, you know, not rise above your station, if you will, in life. And it's being told through the lens of, like, three horror movies that are being shown through the lens of three genres of film. So, like, the first one's Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Pearl is like a warped Technicolor Wizard of Oz riff, and then Maxine is like pure 80s De Palma, Giallo type movie.
Yeah, complete with split screens.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
A lot of opening act of The Howling. I got a lot of that in this, too.
Yeah, I mean, and maybe, and that's the thing. It's, I think part of the problem with horror movies that look so good is that I think you tend to read more into them than maybe, you know, these are like basically a little bit elevated B movies, but they're like supposed to be just kind of fun and sleazy. And then
are they being like, is A24 now kind of hamstringing movies where you think, oh, this is A24. It's supposed to mean something. And it's like, no, we're just making a horror movie.
And we're having a good time, like with the period details and like the silliness and stuff. Yeah. But then you have Maxine walk over the star, and I have to look up the name.
Theda Bara's
star, and then that's like a sex symbol, and I went down a whole Wikipedia rabbit hole about her. And
it's the name of the alligator in the prior two movies.
Oh,
in
really?
Pearl, her name is Theda. So it's there's a lot of, if you go back and watch, and if you go back to cite a podcast that puts in a lot, or a YouTuber that puts in a lot more work than us, James A. Janisse, you know, really combs through these movies. And I watched that just because I knew, okay, he always does a lot of behind the scenes stuff. And I always find that really interesting. But like, there's little things like in Pearl, she's told she doesn't have the X factor. Then there's a sign behind them. It's like on the set here, that's like looking for girls with that X factor. And it's, you know, there's a lot of care and detail put into this world. And I think this one's also tough because it's the biggest expansion of the story. Like the first two are essentially set in the same location, just decades apart.
Right. And then this has the sprawling Los Angeles. And because of that, it has a sprawling cast too. And I think the biggest problem this movie has, because I genuinely enjoy this movie, but I think the biggest problem this has is because the cast is bigger, because the scope is a little bit bigger too. Maxine kind of gets lost in the noise a little bit.
Yeah, I was like, the Maxine of the first 15 minutes sort of disappears after she gets, like, after murders start happening, after she gets that videotape. She becomes I think it's all the scenes of her just getting a dressing down from Elizabeth Debicki, where she doesn't feel like the Maxine we know from the first movie and the beginning of this one.
Yeah,
the Maxine where if you cross her, she will crush at least part of you.
Yeah, it's weird. She sort of becomes not so much a proactive character, but a reactive character for a good chunk of the movie. And then when you think she's going to be a reactive character, a lot of stuff kind of like just happens around her.
The third act, and I read an interview with Ty West where I think he said like they had a lot of ideas for what the third act would be, including like a supernatural thing with like Pearl's ghosts or something.
Yeah.
But you know, I think the third act, she does get kind of lost in it at the end, and then there's kind of a weird like double ending.
Yeah,
and it's like the twist is, you kind of see it coming, but like her spoiler alerts for Maxine, by the way. like her dad's character just suddenly feels like he's in a completely different movie. Just, you know, in the performance and the camp of it all.
Well, I mean, I think it works for like the type of movie that this is, but it doesn't work as sort of like a trilogy ender. if that, like, it works as if Maxine was this 1980s sleazy, you know, De Palma riff, and it works in that end, but it doesn't really work with the prior two movies, and doesn't really connect. And I think this is part of my problem with sort of why the themes don't always sort of mesh for me here, is that it doesn't connect to sort of what the other movies were sort of delving into with their themes, with the aging stuff and the fame stuff, a little bit of the fame stuff, I guess, but it kind of doesn't really cohere for me. And that's sort of where I run into, my head sort of runs into the whole, like, is this an elevated piece of art, or is this sort of more like a grindhouse riff?
I mean, we've seen grindhouse riffs. They come out all the time. Like, I'd say there's more going on in this than there are in the two movies in Grindhouse.
Yeah.
But those guys are just, they just want to play in the sandbox.
They're just having fun, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's, like, I love 70s, 80s, dark Hollywood movies, like the because like there is no more cursed place in this state on this coast than the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah,
just yes. All the scenes with them going up into the Hollywood Hills in this movie, it is just like, you've driven up there, you've been on Mulholland, you've been on near like Cielo Drive and stuff, just bad vibes up there. The shit that's gone down in those hills, like, they do a really good job of capturing that. And I guess it's just whatever's built up in your head is going to be more exciting than what ultimately turns out to be what's going on.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And, you know, I do love a lot of the ending here. And I love sort of the fantasy flash that she has, or maybe it is a real flash forward, or, you know, whatever's going on in that moment. I like all that. And I like her weird little catharsis with her dad, where she repeats back the line, "I will not accept a life I do not deserve." I like that. I don't know. It feels sort of disconnected from the other two movies. I think it works for like the 80s sleaze here. But
I wonder if it would have been better if you'd made the father more of a character throughout. If it wasn't a big reveal, either he shows up and you don't know he's the killer, or he shows up and you do know about, like, we follow the POV of him and his cult throughout, so there's a little bit more of a collision course that's been set up. Maybe in lieu of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah, or if you saw more of them, even in X, I know there's like a bit of them on a TV screen at one point, but if you saw more of them sort of throughout.
Yeah, I think it works I think it works fine in X. I think it's, because it's not like, It's just a nice little button on the end. If anything, this movie maybe needed to be more sprawling.
Yeah, maybe a little longer, maybe a little more Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Well, it's like, I've told you my White Album theory of storytelling. It's like, no double album. You either make a single album or a triple album. You either tighten it up to 12 good tracks, or you let George write 12 tracks, and you have just a big mess of an album. White Album is either too much or not enough, and sometimes there are movies that are like that too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, and that's true. I mean, because you've got like so many wonderful characters with like amazing character actors who don't really get a whole lot, like, you don't get explored all that much. And I mean, I would have loved more of Elizabeth Debicki. I would have loved more of Giancarlo Esposito. Like, I would have, and even Kevin Bacon, I would have loved like more of that.
Yeah.
And
more of her friends, more of Halsey, more of her, the guy who runs the video store.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause you get the sense that she does care about her friends, but you don't really get a sense of why they're friends or how they're friends.
She's like different than Pearl. Pearl is obviously in Pearl is played by Mia Goth as well, but like a psychopath. Pearl's insane. Like, Pearl, famous or not famous, is an insane, violent human being. Maxine is like, she's an interesting character because she'll kill you. She's a little crazy. She's got a little bit of Lisbeth Salander from the Dragon Tattoo books.
Absolutely.
In her. But she's also like a functioning human being. She has friends. She has a life. She's doing porno and peep shows, but it's just part of getting through the day in 80s LA.
Right.
And like the same thing with her in the first movie. It's like, she's not abrasive. She's just driven as hell to be famous.
So like in movies, you have people who are driven to be famous, and they be, and that like is their singular focus, and they become not real characters because of that. I mean, Pearl is kind of that character cranked up to 11, right?
Yeah.
It's the movie character who wants to be a movie star or a star more than anything else. But he, you know, and part of it I think is Mia Goth's performance, but you know, she feels like a real person. She doesn't feel like an insane. She's insanely driven, but she feels in a realistic way.
Yeah, well, and also that movie is in that sort of the tech. It's shot in Technicolor. It's meant to feel like, you know, old Disney movies and Wizard of Oz, and it is. It's also leaning into the character trope of main character who wants to get off to the farm and go. You know, it's Luke and Harry Potter and Dorothy Gale, you know, it's playing on all of those, but she's nuts and she's not necessarily all that talented.
Yeah. Not talented at all is the impression that you get, right? Yeah. I mean, that audition.
Well, it is, and it is also just a parade of people realizing that they're trapped in a room with an insane person, like the her sister-in-law or her mother or David Corin Sweat.
It's like, what have I done?
Oh dear,
I am alone with this person.
This is the one I want though. It's like her husband, man. Good sport. He stuck around after that ending.
Who plays the husband in X?
I forget the actor's name. I can tell you right now. Because he's not as old as he appears in that. Stephen Ur is the actor's name.
Okay.
And then Larry Fessenden does his voice.
Okay, credited. Great, of course.
Larry Fessenden's all over these movies.
Right,
bless his
heart. He's the security guard in this one, mm-hmm. right? When they're in the Bates house, and oh boy, is this so? I know it doesn't reference Psycho 3 directly; it references Psycho 2. But is this the first one, a threequel that we've covered that has referenced another movie that we've? I mean, I guess X-Men referenced Return of the Jedi, but.
X-Men referenced Return of the Jedi.
I don't know.
Halloween 3 references Halloween, and they are technically different timelines. No, this one wouldn't reference Psycho 3 because Psycho 3 comes out in 86, and this is 85.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to say maybe, but also Scream 3 could reference any number of horror movies.
True, and
I would have missed it. Like, they could drop... we haven't done Godfather 3. Scream 3 definitely references Godfather 3.
Yeah.
And also, I was sitting there, like... I was, like... At one point, I was sitting there, like, thinking, oh, these are some tweaks I would make to this story. Like, my usual jackass, like, here's how I would do it. Like, tweaks to it, and I was like, well, what if she was, you know... If the actors making the movie were getting killed and it was about Maxine's life. And then I was like, oh, I just pitched Scream 3 to myself.
But I mean, I do wish that those two worlds really collided a little bit more. If like the, you know, if the killers were maybe killing people off of this horror movie and it really was impacting the, I mean, I guess one actress does get killed, but if it really was impacting the production.
I wouldn't be shocked if they considered, because they talk about at the end, Elizabeth Debicki's character, the director, is going to be making a movie about Maxine's life. I wouldn't be shocked if at one point they considered, what if they're making a movie about the events of the first movie. And then like it's like someone's killing actors or like people involved in the movie, but that is just Scream 3. So
yeah.
You know, you're kind of stuck there. It would probably been better than Scream 3, but
right.
But it's like I think it is everyone in it's great.
Yeah,
and it's like you said, like you want to get to know a lot of the characters a little more. Like you like Giancarlo Esposito is great in this because it's also such a not his type of character.
Right. Because
you assume he's going to be an absolute scumbag and he's the best agent ever. Like he's the nicest human being on the planet. And he will help, like no questions asked. He will help crush a PI at his client's behest for his 10%. But it is also like The actor's name is Uli Latukefu. He was in the Young Rock series. He played one of the young Dwayne Johnsons.
Okay.
He's the porno director who also helps out. And we only see him twice.
And he doesn't say anything. He's just kind of...
He has a line at the beginning where it's like, you know, so-and-so is ready to blast if you can get back on set. Because he's just a day at the office at the porno studio. But then the next time you see him, she's calling him up like, hey, bring your Dobermans. We got to kill this guy. And he has no issue with that.
Yeah, and he's just like, all right, yeah. And that porno studio functions as a strip club and a brunch place, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's, you know, you got to 24 hours a day making use of that facility. Got a nice big goose full of cocaine right at your table, you know.
And that sort of, the cocaine use in this movie sort of felt a little... For a movie that you know, obviously it's very much trying to do that 80s sleaze, the cocaine use felt a little over the top for me.
Well, I mean, it's what's the drug you would be using if you were a movie star in 1985? Right? It's not like you're going to have her smoking crack.
It's also like, you know, he has her cut it with her SAG card at one point, and you're kind of like, come on.
That establishes that she's had success. She's an actor now. It's like Lily Collins says, you know, it's, you know, even if you're not famous, it keeps your health insurance going.
Fair enough.
It's off to a party in the hills. Yeah, I don't know. It is like, it does feel like it's so hard to put into words. Because I, like you, I really liked it, and it's gorgeous. They shot the shit out of it. It's got such good grain. It had all that grain.
And the Brian Tyler score is fantastic.
Soundtrack's great. Yeah. Little Frankie Goes to Hollywood in there. Yeah, I mean, it's they everything on a technical level and in the performances. And for the bulk of the story, they nailed it. I just feel like something's missing. And it also might be just like, it felt like a little, like, it felt less, like, it had less faith in its audience than the first two, where it's, like, there were some, like, unnecessary flashbacks to, like stuff that happened, like, 10 minutes prior, and I feel like we could have conveyed that in a different way, and I don't know, maybe that was just how it came out in the edit. They were just trying to make it all come together in that third act.
Yeah, or if it was more, or if some of those flashbacks was more of reference stuff to like sort of old, a lot of those sort of sleazy Hollywood movies I haven't seen in a while, so I don't remember if that was sort of a stylistic technique that like De Palma would use, or, you know, I don't know. I haven't seen Body Double in a very, very long time.
I mean, so. I think you can improve on De Palma. That's probably my big issue.
No, I agree, too.
Like, my favorite De Palma stuff is the stuff he did before and after his 80s sleaze. I like Mission Impossible and Phantom of the Paradise. I feel like we're selling it short because I really liked it, and it's a really good trilogy. It's, again, I think the third one's the weakest. That's always the case. But I think it's a really good watch if you do 1, 2, 3, because they're you know, it's a, you get this main actor as your through line, giving three very different performances, even though Maxine is the lead in two of the movies.
Yeah.
And they're all like a lot of fun. Like, even if you just want to watch some like throwback horror movies, these are great.
Yeah, and the cast for all three of these movies are really great. Like, the cast in X is so good. Like, Brittany Snow and Kid Cudi. Like, they're all, like,
Brittany Snow just being like, I am going to break with my typecasting as violently as possible. Like, I have played I have been doing John Tucker Must Die and Pitch Perfect for 20 years.
And, goodness gracious, Wednesday, what's her name?
Jenna Ortega.
Jenna Ortega.
This is part of the run-up to Jenna Ortega's ascendancy.
Yeah, I mean, and he gets, Ty West gets really great performances out of everybody, and then Pearl, which is even, I think, harder on the cast, because they have to, like, be part of this, you know, elevated Technicolor acting style, and so
it's less a straight riff on a horror genre.
Right, and I think it's harder for them to sort of do. But again, I keep coming back to, like, am I, is it me? Am I just overthinking it, or am I too dumb? Like, where, like,
no, I don't think you're overthinking it. I think it's that with all the themes and references and aesthetics and homages are all great, but it's sometimes the story at its heart just has pacing issues. It's really not that complicated. It's like it's like people talking about The Last Jedi, where they're all like arguing over the themes and the deconstruction, and I'm like, I just think the middle act has problems. You know, it's like,
yeah,
in this case, I think it is that Maxine is just too passive for the back half of the movie. Like, she's, you know, she's tied to a tree in the for the most of the climax, and it's up to the two detectives who, you know, we all love Bobby Cannavale and Michelle Monaghan, but that's not who we're here to see.
Yeah. Yeah, God, Michelle Monaghan goes out in, like, yeah, one of the most gruesome ways possible.
I know.
It's kind of
hilarious,
amazing,
though.
But it's
she's
so
like,
funny.
I she told you I'd get him, and then just goes careening down the hill.
Is it a crucifix that's stuck in her eye? Yeah.
I think Papa put the crucifix in her eye.
And they're funny. I like the I like them and like the sardonic sort of humor that they bring to it. They're
yeah,
they're
their
pretty
fake
great
good
together.
Cop bad cop routine is pretty yeah. good. Yeah, like it's yeah. all great. That's why yeah. I stand by. Maybe it needed more, not less. I think.
Yeah. No,
like,
I think you're right.
I think sometimes this kind of like look, we're talking about Dario Argento and Brian De Palma movies. Neither of those guys exercised any sort of restraint, like when it comes to just like. Yeah, our movies are bloody and sleazy, but they are also incredibly shambling sometimes, and they're going to take their time, they're going to have a bunch of weird characters, and then in the case of something like Argento, they're just going to end. They're going to have a freeze frame when Dario feels like it, and then they roll credits.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, I don't know, like... I don't know how far in depth we want to dive into this. It's because again, you can. I went down a whole rabbit hole of what's her name? His name completely escapes me. But it was like at 3 a.m. where I was just looking at the Thea Barta stuff.
Thea Barta, yeah, Thea she was Barta, like the, yeah.
She was one of the first sex symbols. And but like, what was the Fox, the studio, made up this story that she came from Egypt and was like into the occult.
Yeah, it's just like, absolute nonsense. I mean, I think it's just Will. It's a love letter to the movies.
I mean, it is. I mean,
like move over Babylon, move over La La Land. This is the real love letter to the movies.
No, I mean it and you know, it does feel of a piece with like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood in a certain way,
or even something like The Player.
You know, yeah, yeah. And this movie also, because I saw them so close together, it felt a lot like The Substance. Did you see The Substance, Sam?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's yeah. the same thing. It's
yeah.
I mean, and there's a lot of movies like that. And I think, yeah, it's definitely like, yeah, definitely The Substance. It is just like...
Well, especially because of all the aging and like fame and what will you do to get fame. And, you know, The Substance obviously has this whole like body... horror body image thing that's pretty gross, but
I do think, and you could play this for comedy, and I don't think they do, which I think is to their credit, is that Maxine is substantially more concerned with losing her career opportunities than she is with losing her own life.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's a hard line to walk with her because she's a compassionate character. She's sad when her friends die, but then she also is like insanely driven.
Right, she's so like, well, this might also ruin my chances of becoming a star in this very strange horror movie I'm in.
Yeah, and I just kind of wish she pushed back against the characters that, like, not like Kevin Bacon and stuff, because she certainly gives him what he deserves, but like Elizabeth Debicki's character or some of the other actors and stuff. She's just like, she kind of loses her sass a little bit in the middle there. And I think,
yeah.
I wonder if that was like, maybe they cut stuff down or it was just, you know, it is the natural way someone would probably be.
Right.
But I think you lose something of what made her so appealing as a character in the first movie and in the beginning of this one. 'Cause the first time you see her in this one, it's like, oh, this is Maxine's back. Like it is
right.
the evolved version of who we saw in X. And I don't know, just something about the like, last 45 minutes of the movie with some moments of exception feels like she's, yeah, like you said, she's reactive.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's strange. 'Cause like you say, like you know, that opening audition scene where she walks out and go and yells to all the other girls waiting in the wings, basically, you know, she says, better leave. I fucking nailed it. You know?
Where's the ball stomping, Maxine, then, we saw in the opening?
Yeah, yeah. And then she stomps on the Buster Keaton balls and shoots him. And like, it's like,
I don't think she shoots him.
Does she not shoot him?
No, she just stomps on his balls. Yeah. It ends on that loving close up of his balls popping out. Right. And then they move on.
they do like burst in like a very fake and funny way.
Well, this is the grading scale of what Maxine will crush. Threaten to mug her, she'll crush your balls. Kill all her friends, she'll crush your head. Threaten her career, she will crush you in a garbage press.
You will get smashed in some way.
That movement's so good. Just the blood that runs out the bottom of that car.
So gross.
They had a big old bladder of blood in there, and they were just ready to go.
Yeah.
Great practical effects in all of these movies.
Yes. Like,
they just loving horrible practical effects. And not just horror stuff, but like going back to X, old age makeup. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know that was Mia Goth the first time I saw it. Like,
well, when I watched it, I was like, huh, there's something weird about this character. And then I think I paused the movie and looked it up, and I was like, oh, it's...
I didn't look it up until after, and also because I think at that point I knew Pearl was coming.
Right.
But also it was kind of like the guy, the husband, Howard, it's good makeup, but it's still more obviously a guy in old age makeup. So you kind of... Your mind's on that. Your focus is on that. And they keep Pearl more in shadow. They keep Pearl more like she's, you know, you don't see her as much at first. So you just, they aged someone up. But you don't realize, oh, it's Mia Goth in there.
Yeah. Yeah. God, these movies are. And then the weirdest scene in this, and I think this is the scene that sort of made me spiral down a lot of like the thematic rabbit holes I went down. Is when she's getting the head cast. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, so it's like this weird meta moment of, because you realize, oh, Mia Goth had to do this for the other movie because she had to get the old age makeup. And then she starts imagining her old age self strangling her. And I'm like, does this mean anything?
Yeah, I wonder, did we need, maybe not a ghost, but did we need more Pearl in this? Did, like, because there's also, you see her in the psycho window, and it's like, that's the kind of, that was the moment where I'm like, okay, the movie's not subtle. We're at the psycho house, and she sees a creepy old dead lady in the window. You don't have to be too subtle when you're making a movie about the making of a horror movie set in Los Angeles in the 80s, you know?
Right, yeah. Yeah, yeah, maybe more Pearl, if not a literal haunting than a figurative one.
She needs Pearl there like Caesar had Koba's ghost in War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
Him worrying that he's going to become like the thing he hated.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that she'll become this reclusive, shut-in sort of who never made it and always wondering about the what could have been. Yeah.
Which I think is 100% intentional and part of her character. I just think maybe they needed to lean into it a little more. There's so many ideas at play here. And I think it's more, it's not so much that it's like Shrek, like an onion, you know, I think it's, I think it is more just like there's a lot of stuff and a lot of it's jockeying for space. And I think needed a little more breathing room.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that's a really astute point. I think
because it's a good movie, but I think there's a great movie in there, and I'm wondering if that, in this case, that's a three disc album, not a one disc album.
And I mean, I'll never fault a movie for having too many ideas. I'll never really criticize a movie for that. But
there's worse movies out there with too many ideas that I've still enjoyed. This was a genuinely really good watch. Like, I liked this movie a lot.
Yeah, and they all play well together. And like I said, I didn't like the first two initially, but then I saw this movie and it retroactively made me appreciate
the other
two more.
Each one levels the previous one up. And unfortunately, I just don't think this movie has to stand on its own because nothing's coming after it unless they make like a movie about her dad or something. I don't know.
Right. Or just, you know, what happens when they make the what is the movie called? They're making
Puritan.
The Puritan 3. Like,
yeah.
Now, Sam, what does it mean if do we cover a movie where they're making a threequel in the movie?
We did. It's called Scream 3.
No. I mean, okay. No. Or do we cover a part 4 where they're making a part 3 in the movie? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, on that very specific scenario, no. It's still a part 4, Will. You can only talk about the fictional movie you see in the movie. You cannot talk about the events of the part 4. Only the diegetic movie threequel inside the fictional fourth film.
Okay, fair enough.
If you can provide me with an example of this happening.
I don't think there is. The only one would be if they made a fourth one of these movies.
Maybe, I don't know. No, the fourth Chucky's Bride of Chucky. Seed of Chucky's the one that goes really meta. So it's that's still the fifth one.
But do they make Child's Play 3 in that?
No, Will, we haven't. We didn't get to watch one of the good Chucky's.
And we don't have a part 5 podcast. So
no,
it's...
that would be... What would that be?
I think it would be a lot of MCU movies and a lot of horror sequels. I think that's
Friday
kinda...
the 13th, A New Beginning. well, I guess it's Attack of the Clones, but also Empire Strikes Back.
Right, yeah.
Because one is the fifth movie and one is episode 5. I'm fine sticking with threequels. It's
well, we've got
us,
enough of them.
We
so
got plenty
okay.
to go. We still haven't watched Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, or Tron Ares, for that matter.
Oh, God, yeah, there were a lot of threequels this year. We got a lot to cover. And it wasn't a threequel, but earlier this year, there was a new Final Destination. Speaking of long-running franchises that refused to die despite death's best efforts. So I thought, wait a minute, I've never seen anything past the first two, except for like snippets online.
I've never seen any of these movies.
Oh,
so
well,
this will be, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know if Final Destination 3 is considered a high watermark, but it's, I'm curious. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, hey, it's, you know, it's one of the best things about this show, and it doesn't happen often, but when it does is when we find little diamonds in the rough. So, you know.
I mean, we can't all be Pantsuit Gilman, but, you know.
No, but, I
it's
mean,
got,
that
it's
is
got,
one of the, that is
it's got Mary Elizabeth Winstead. We love her, you know.
Yeah.
It's at the very least, you can hope for some good set pieces. That's what you can hope for from Final Destination. Like, there's a highway scene in the second one that is incredible. There's the new one had the space needle, I think, like collapses or something crazy like that. That's usually how they open. So yeah, let's check it out. Let's take a roller coaster ride.
Let's do it. I'm down.
But X, Pearl, Maxine, if you haven't seen them, watch them all. Great trilogy. Like, it's so rare to get a trilogy where you're like, yeah, these all work in concert with each other.
Yeah. All right, Sam, it's time for our now-famed threequel rating. 1 out of 3. What do you give Maxine?
I'm giving it a soft 3. It's a 3. It's still a 3. It's got problems as on its own as a movie, but as a threequel, as the conclusion to a trilogy, nails it. And also, it's a great-looking movie. It's a lot of fun. The gore effects are fantastic. The performances are really good. Like, it's given you everything you need from it. Like, we have notes, but, I mean, there's no such thing as a perfect movie.
No. I'm with you. I think a soft 3 is warranted. It's a fun watch, and it complements the other movies really well, and ends this trilogy on a high note and where it needs to go. And yeah, so 3 for me too.
Excellent. Good times. Totally worth picking Crow Salvation last year over this, but you know.
We were going to do this. I don't know.
And then I didn't,
episode.
I just
we
was so
it.
Annoyed by that movie. I didn't edit the podcast for 6 months. I was like,
that was
oh.
a bad one.
But
that
I got to
really
do this one because
then
I got to edit the creature episode because that's a masterpiece, you know? So I guess you got to eat your vegetables before you get to dessert. So
there you are.
All right. Well, I hope everyone is having a good October, good start to the Halloween season. It felt a little bit cool, a little bit autumny here in LA, and I hope you're feeling the same wherever you are. And we will see you next time for Final Destination 3.
And do not accept a life you do not deserve.
I will not accept a life I do not deserve. Also, like, subscribe, and review us, please.
And rate, too.
Rate. Okay. How much are you supposed to do?
I think it's just rate, review, and subscribe, but you said like, so it's okay. It all works.
I don't know. Can they find us on the MySpace?
But you did the voice. The voice was really good.
Well, thank you. I mean, in addition to all the other things I'm frustrated about, I'm a frustrated actor. Will, always fun. This was a good one.
Yep.
All right. See you folks later.
Adios.
Bye.
Y'all might as well go home, 'cause I just fucking nailed it.